Good morning and welcome. This is Mike Harris, recording on VeteransToday.com, also on FreedomSlips.com. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2016, but you'll be hearing this show on Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. Today we have a special guest, Benjamin Fulford. And so, Ben, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Fine. It's April 25th here already, by the way.
Okay, well, good. So I'm not actually inaccurate. That's good. Anyway, just wanted to invite you on. There's a lot going on in your area of the world, particularly the Korean Peninsula. But more importantly than what's going on in Korea, I think is what's going on in Japan, which is not getting any coverage in the USA. Yeah. And I know you and I have been talking about the developments over there over, you know, the recent months. So why don't we start there and work our way around to Korea later? But let's focus on this because I think this is really critical, particularly if this is going to cut off the banking cartels of cash flow out of Japan.
All right. Well, here's the first thing though that you need to understand is that North Korea as a country was established by the Japanese army that, you know, was in China during World War II. So, and since World War II, and North Korea and Korean agents and North Korean agents in Japan have been always cooperating with the CIA as secret enforcers to maintain U.S. rule over Japan. Okay, so that is why the Chinese view North Korea as a U.S. ally. If people don't understand that, they're not going to understand anything about what's going on here. And you know, I've been here 30 years. I've, you know, written 70 books in Japanese. I've talked to all these people for many years. So you know, I'm not just talking about, without serious evidence. So what's been going on is that I've been trying to, for years now, encourage both the Chinese and the Japanese to stop funding the regime in Washington, D.C. And the reason is because, the Khazarian mob, as I call it, has taken over your country, and they've been financing terrorism around the world. And, you know, the United States has been at war almost constantly since the end of World War II. And the view is that we cut off the money until they stop their anti-social behavior around the world. And this time we're coming to another deadline, May 1st, when the Puerto Rico is supposed to go bankrupt, and that could trigger a domino effect that could take down Washington, D.C. And what I want to make very clear is, I've put my name forward as the bankruptcy manager for the United States corporation. In other words, I've hand delivered letters to the highest authorities here, saying that if you put me in charge of the economy, I will turn things around in Japan and the U.S. And this is, I want people to understand that when the Soviet Union collapsed, Russia did not disappear. What happened was, you know, a bureaucratic structure that was dysfunctional was dismantled and replaced with something healthier. And the same thing is going to go, I'm pushing for the United States. And, it would be very, very good for the average American person. I think that we could double the median living standard.
Well, Ben, let me interject something here, because what you're saying about Russia, and I have a data point for you that is of great interest, and that is, since Vladimir Putin took over 18 years ago as the president of Russia, the average life expectancy in Russia has increased by 6.5 years. Life expectancy is the best barometer for improvement in the quality of life. So that's really kudos to Vladimir Putin for what he has achieved there. And if we would get something along those lines, that would help the U.S., because our lifespan in this country has been declining now for the last decade. So it we need to turn around. We need to get things back on track.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that as soon as Trump kicked out the Khazarian oligarchs, literally within a year, standards of living doubled. And I say I use the median as opposed to the average, because median is where half the people are above this level and half the people are below. Average is you take the total and you divide it by the amount of people. So if Bill Gates walks into a room of homeless people, suddenly they're each worth many millions of dollars, but they're still homeless people. That's why I use the median, which means
well, if Bill Gates walks into a room of homeless people, and you know he's the 100th out of 99, the value of the individuals in the room has gone up, even though it hasn't changed for those who are homeless, just because Bill Gates skewed the average.
Yeah, and that's what's happening when they put out their statistics in the U.S. Most people are now living third world living standards in the United States because of this Khazarian looting of the American people's money. So when I put myself forward as someone to take over the bankruptcy management, the thing would involve, first of all, returning all the money that was stolen from the American people by these criminal Khazarians to them. And that alone, I think, I haven't done the math for a while, but it should be at least $100,000 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S., right off the bat. But the other thing is that, what they're doing with Trump is they're trying to kick the can down the road again, and they're trying to sort of, rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, so to speak. They're not dealing with the fundamental problems. They're not nationalizing the Federal Reserve Board. They're not redistributing the stolen assets. They're not having a jubilee. They're not doing anything fundamental. They're just trying to, keep the system going with a bit more, duct tape and rubber bands. And it's reached the point where you really need to reboot. And this is what I'm trying to get people to understand. And, it can be done in such a way that all the healthy parts of U.S. institutions remain after this change. It's not going to be as disruptive as people think it will be. But we need to, really drain the swamp, get rid of these pedophile, satanic, blackmailed politicians. We all know who they are, and a lot of them, you may have noticed, have been vanishing one by one, and they will continue to do so until they're all gone. There is a campaign against them. You can see it now. George Soros is gone. Nicolas Sarkozy is gone. Tony Blair is gone. George Bush Sr. had to go into a hospital to avoid arrest. Who else is gone? John Kerry. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen the Clintons. George Soros is gone. I mean, this is happening. And it's going to continue to happen until these people step aside. There's just too many of us now for them to bribe or assassinate to stop it. It's just reached a critical mass. They can't do it anymore. But the more the point is that we need to think about it's always easy to be against something. I remember this leftist lady, activist came to me one day and said, what should I oppose now? And I think,
sorry, that's funny.
What should I support? It's easier to criticize someone for spilling a glass of milk than it is to figure out how to put the milk back in the glass, So what I'm saying is we all know the system is dysfunctional and we all know the problems, but we need to start thinking seriously about what to do next, constructive, plans for rebuilding the system. And that's, what I'm proposing, to do, to get some of the best brains in the world to help reboot the United States by copying best practices from around the world. Right now, your economy is controlled by a very small group of oligarchs who use foundations and cross shareholdings to control the Fortune 500 companies. And they are the general real source of your power, as is. But with the death of the apex of this whole system, David Rockefeller, there's a huge rank at the top now, that and the perfect opportunity to really make big changes. And that's what I'm pushing for, and that's, you know, what I've been trying to convince the Chinese and the Japanese, your main creditors, to support. So all this fuss about North Korea is really about whether or not Japan and the powers that be out here decide to, you know, finally make a break with the Washington, D.C. establishment. That's what's really going on here.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit, because if there is a pending bankruptcy, you know, Puerto Rico could be the first domino, let's just say that. But if there is a pending bankruptcy, and if USA Incorporated goes bankrupt and can no longer establish credit or service its debts, you know, there's two possibilities if it goes into receivership. One of them is that the power structure that be remains as debtor in possession. The other one is that the creditors take over and become the creditor in possession. You know, any insights on this is to, you know, because there's a lot of leverage in both of these positions. There's a lot of power.
Well, okay. The first of all, the creditors have the ability to keep financing things. Mm-hmm. The creditors, in this case, have the control of the U.S. military industrial complex, which then waged war around the world. And so it's a Mexican standoff unless both sides agree.
But wait. If hypothetically, let's say that the U.S. government shuts down, can't print money, doesn't have the ability to make payroll, how long do you think this military machine that the U.S. has got is going to stay together? Because if these guys aren't getting paychecks, and if they're deployed out in the field and their wife is at home on the base in the U.S. And no money's coming in, and they can't afford to go buy, you know, milk, bread, and eggs for the kids, it's going to get pretty dicey out there pretty fast.
Yeah, which is why I've consistently told the Chinese and the Japanese to make sure that all the U.S. Forces overseas continue to receive their paychecks during the transition. And inside the United States, what I've recommended is that you make contingency plans for shutting down the banking system and rebooting it. There are technocrats who could do it better than me. I'm not a detail guy. I'm a sort of forest guy, not a tree guy. But, you know, something like shut it down, you know, and then in the meantime, give everybody enough cash and make sure the logistics are there for everybody to get their gasoline and food and everything during the transition, and reboot it. And the things that need to be removed once it's rebooted, the first thing is you need to go into the financial industry and take out all the fraud. That means the supercomputer stock trading, the Forex trading, all that stuff that's been going on. For example, there's more than 1,000 times more volume in Forex trading every day than there's actual need for foreign exchange, i.e. people getting traveler's checks to go to France or somebody, you know, paying for cars from Japan or something. This is what foreign exchange is supposed to be about, but it's become a humongous parasitic casino, same with the stock market. It's not in tune with reality anymore. And this is the sort of thing that needs to be fundamentally changed. And the same thing, I've said it many times and I'll say it again, you need a jubilee, a one-off cancellation of all debt, public and private. And you need a redistribution of assets. It's like they had the land reform. You need the same thing now, but it has to be with assets. And to some extent, real estate in the cities. Okay, everybody should, you know, it can be done in such a way that everybody becomes the owner of where they live. And you can use government money from a nationalized Federal Reserve Board to pay the equivalent in rent to people who rely on rental income for their living. This can be done. What people need to understand is that the financial system is not reality. Reality is people, it's land, it's buildings, it's factories, it's know-how. And the financial system, even if the dollar disappeared, the stock market was shut down, people would still be there. Agricultural land would still be there. Food would still be there. All the real stuff would still be there. It's just the system of how to exchange it would be reformed. and it would be reformed to make it much better. This is a thing we need to get working on.
Well, how do we get the banking cabal to the banking cartel to cooperate with this? I mean, do the Chinese and the Japanese have to call the note and then put them on an allowance? You know, you're used to spending, you know, so many billion a month. We're going to only give you a third of that, 40% of that, in order to run things with.
The thing is, for the United States, the main issue is to ensure a continued flow of oil from the Middle East to keep everything going. The rest, if you declare we declare bankruptcy, saying, sorry, we can't pay our bills anymore, all right, maybe suddenly, you won't be able to buy trinkets from China at Walmart. But, so what? I'm sorry, it's not that important. it can be done. But you have to, at some point, you have to go cold turkey and say, okay, enough's enough. We have to reboot. And if the United States declared bankruptcy, it would force, as I've said repeatedly, the United States military would be financed around the world, but they would be, over time, their activities would be switched to something more productive, like helping the planet and not just stealing resources for Khazarian oligarchs, which a lot of them do without knowing it. For example, the Chinese want to build a set of highways and railways all over Africa. And right now you have U.S. military creating these fake terrorist armies to try to stop the Chinese from building these roads and highways. Instead, they should be paid by the Chinese to protect these roads and highways and even get a pay rise, and then also, redeploy special forces to stop the poachers from killing,
the rhinos and the elephants, everything else. Yeah.
In other words, do stuff that's actually helpful for the planet and not just be,
Not just be thugs and collection agents, racketeers. Yeah.
Yeah, Commander Buttley said, that's not what the U.S. military wants to be, and that's not what the American people expect of them. The other big thing that has to be dealt with is right now we have a situation where you have white hats in the U.S. military who are trying to shut down the international drug trade by force. And that's just not going to work. There's too much money involved, and it's $2 trillion a year, my estimate of the value of the drug trade, the illegal drug trade, and that's about three times the official U.S. military budget. What you need to do is legalize it and regulate it to minimize the damage and make sure
Ben, I've been advocating that position for a long time, and that is legalize it and take the profit motive out of it.
Yeah, and that way you can, for example, in the North Korean case, it's the big amphetamine thing that they've been doing with the CIA forever. And then it used to be the Golden Triangle was where they did the heroin, but now that's shifted to Afghanistan.
Well, just as an example, the cost to manufacture a gram of cocaine is about 7 cents, but it sells on the street for close to $100. Yeah. So it gives you an idea as to what the profit motive is when things are, over 1,000% or 10,000% profit right there. It's highly motivated. So I agree. Let's legalize it, regulate it, and, take, 90% of the profit motive out.
Yeah. And then people have been consulting me about the Middle East and, what to do about the situation there. And again, first of all, the whole world has to tell these religious fanatics in Israel and elsewhere that there's not going to be a war between Gog and Magog, and there's not going to be a situation where at the end of it, every Jew will have 2,800 slaves working for them. It's just not going to happen. And wake up from that dream. It's just not going to happen, folks. Sorry, this is what these Chabad or these fundamentalist wacko Zionists secretly believe. It's not even secret. It's out there. So we got to, first of all, make sure these people understand, no, it's not an inevitable prophecy from God. It's a mass delusion, okay? We got to stop these people. And then if you look at the Middle East map on the ground, and historically and linguistically. What you can see is a solution seems to be possible right now, where you basically divide the Middle East into three spheres of influence. One is the Turks, the Turkish area, maybe you know, expanding a little bit in their borders. Next would be Persia, which would include the Shia areas of Lebanon and Syria and Iraq. And the other would be Arab, which would be the Sunni areas and Egypt. And you could have three large, stable blocks with, you know, people like Assad operating as autonomous rulers within that. And you could stabilize this situation. And the United States military has been fighting in Saudi Arabia against Yemen and Iran, not for ideological reasons, but simply to make sure that they keep getting their oil for their machines. And so we've got to make sure that the oil flows to the people who need it, and that the oil income is all divided up, you know, according to, you know, fair. I mean, there's got to be some horse trading to go on, but, you know, we're going to have to figure that out. You know, how much do the Russians get? How much do the Iranians get? How much do the Arabs get? You know, and make sure that the U.S. military industrial machine gets oil. And you know, it can all be worked out. It's not an insolvable problem. And the brainwashed Europeans who think they came from a country called Judea that existed 3,500 years ago can be allowed to continue to live their, you know, lifestyle down in Israel if that's what they want, and in peace, you know?
Mm-hmm. I do. Tell them to quit killing their neighbors.
Yeah. Quit thinking you're about to take over the world and that they're, you know, they're in a God-driven mission. And we need to, of course, the other thing is that we need to go into Zug, Switzerland, and into the BIS and all these sort of top ruling nodes and you know, do a final clean. Okay, I've been hearing new names like Rosenberg, Cabot family, Eisenberg, not just the Rothschilds and stuff, but the other names are popping up now and you can see they're running out of people. Like in the United States, they had to go to, you know, this Jared Kushner guy is in his 30s because the older generation has been shunted aside. Now in France, they got this guy called Macron, who was a Rothschild banker, you know, pulled out of nowhere. I doubt his real name is Macron. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was actually a member of this Rothschild family complex. And they're trying to steal an election to try to somehow keep their little thing going, you know. Mm-hmm. And another thing that's very important is the election on April 29th of a new head for the Knights of Malta.
Yes.
And one level is just 60 old men, you know, who are part of a charitable organization. But in reality, these are the people who have controlled the Western agencies and militaries, you know, at the highest level. I know this when I went to Italy to meet the P2 Lodge, and you know, the person who was fired, I'm just trying to pull up his name, it's Festin, was one of the people behind the 311, the Fukushima attacks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been removed, and hopefully that whoever they choose on April 29th will be in favor of a real, you know, world change, like a jubilee and a huge campaign to end poverty and stop environmental destruction and a new balance between East and West. It's something that it's within our grasp, and we're down to a few individuals. You know, it's really getting to that point where as more and more of these old power brokers have vanished, there's a vacuum, and we need to do this in a transparent manner, not in behind closed doors. And we need to get, you know, the thinking people of the planet all to put on their thinking caps and make sure we come up with the best possible solution and not descend into, you know, French Revolution type chaos, which is what can happen. If you look at Egyptian or other dynastic history, and you have some king who's been around for 70 years and suddenly dies, there's inevitable chaos because nobody remembers how transitions are made.
They seem to forget.
Now that David Rockefeller is gone, this is the sort of situation we find ourselves in. And there's different people pushing to become the new pharaoh, you know, and this could lead to warfare and turnicing and chaos unless it's handled in a coherent and open manner, with, you know, everybody in on what's going on, everybody who's, you know, paying attention. A lot of people are too busy with their fantasy world on the internet or whatever to you know, matter. I'm sorry to say, but, you know, they just... They're not paying attention, and that's their problem, you know?
Yep, I agree. So, all right, these are the domestic issues within the U.S. You know, what's, you know, I think what we're seeing in Korea is a symptom. I don't think it's really the prime cause. Yeah. And I think what Trump is doing, you know, I mean, you look at how he was with Syria. He had a strike. Nobody anticipated it. Here it is. He launched his 59 cruise missiles, spends $100 million. Bang, it's done. It's over. But Korea, he's going through a lot of showmanship, a lot of stagecraft here. He's sending three carrier groups. He called all the senators to the White House for a briefing. All of this posturing, it seems like, you know, what's your take on the play acting that's going on, the setup that's coming for Korea?
It's bluster. I mean, I think, you know, the RAND Corporation and Raytheon, all these sort of military industrial complex think tanks. I remember years ago, they said, well, to help the U.S. economy, they need to pick a fight with a medium-sized country, like maybe Brazil or Japan. You know, this is an actual RAND Corporation recommendation, you know, as a way of helping the U.S. economy. So I think that there's a group of these people who have been part of this, you know, military industrial thing that's been going on ever since Eisenhower warned us about it, but saying, I think picking a fight with North Korea is what would help avoid our bankruptcy. And that would, in a sense, also involve picking a fight with, in fact, China and Japan, because they are behind North Korea, not to mention a large fraction of the CIA who are also involved, you know. So it's not what they think it is. And, North Korea does have submarines off the U.S. coast. They can, you know, destroy U.S. cities, but they won't because it's not going to be allowed to happen. Okay, I've heard from Illuminati grandmasters that a fundamental decision is when they say they're not going to let people use nukes in this situation. And I think there's only like three nuclear weapons that are now able to be deployed around the world. These are the ones that were stolen from the Russian submarine Kursk in the year.
Yes, I remember that. No, but the issue is that North Korea wouldn't even have to strike a U.S. city. All they have to do is detonate a nuclear device 50 miles up in the atmosphere right off the West Coast. It'll take out everything west of the Mississippi on the power grid. The EMP pulse alone would shut the U.S. down for decades.
Yeah, and they've already demonstrated they have ballistic missile technology to reach anywhere in the U.S. Look, the fact is that the North Korean nuclear program is really a Japanese nuclear program, and the Japanese have been sending, you know, things to space and whatever for decades. I think it was Boris Yeltsin who once admitted that the Japanese told only top leaders that they had 5,000 nuclear tipped missiles, okay? So, in other words, this is not going to be something they're going to be able to solve with war. It's got to be through talking. Because, of course, everybody, you know, they no matter how many times they do the situation, if they try all-out nuclear war, 90% of humanity dies and the Northern Hemisphere becomes uninhabitable. And nobody wants that to happen except for these Kazarian fanatics who think that's their Gog and Magog scenario. And we've got to remove these people whenever we find them. We've got to get rid of them. They're dangerous to the planet, you know. But so, in other words, setting up a new, better system to replace the core system, you improve it, reboot it, and rebalance it, that's what we got to do. I think that the Rothschild efforts with the carbon trading and the Paris Agreement was not quite there, but it was pretty good the way they settled the voting power and other things. The problem is that it would have left them, the Rothschilds, in secret control still, which is not something we want because they're not nice people. And it didn't involve a jubilee or redistribution of assets. So, but nonetheless, the power balance that they negotiated is some roughly the sort of thing we need to, you know, set up. But, you know, like I say, for now, let's try to bust these people once and for all so we can go into the Chapter 11 negotiations for the United States and Washington, D.C. Corporation and come out a healthier, happier country where you know, life expectancy and childbirth goes up, like in Russia. And Japan, too, of course. Japan is also in terminal decline because of Khazarian rule, and they need to start having babies again and the optimistic future, which the current system does not provide. The current system is one where the medical establishment is increasing its profits while people are getting less and less healthy, where half of everybody is now getting cancer because of cancer-causing chemicals being put in their daily products. It's a sick, dysfunctional system in so many ways, and we're all aware of it. And like I said, I've done this, I think I've used this example many times, but I will again. When I'm writing a story, sometimes it just doesn't work, and I have to delete the whole thing and start again from scratch. And we're sort of at that level. We have a system that has become so dysfunctional that just repairing it and teetering along is no longer the best
option. Yeah, well, the system's become toxic, and you know your examples you use are even further ranging than you know. Where we have doctors creating sickness, the same way we have intelligence agencies creating enemies. Like ISIS is a contrived enemy; it's not real. It's a creation of the CIA, Mossad, and the Saudi intelligence service, and they create it in order to have an enemy to publicly fight. It's bizarre. Are what they do. They create their own market by creating either illness or an enemy or whatever else. It's a highly dysfunctional system.
Yeah, and enough of us, a critical mass of us, have become aware of this. And at the very top, they really are Satanists. They worship death, and they're not normal. Some of these people, they're just not. They don't. They're psychopaths and they're at the highest levels of power. I mean, there's less and less of them. We're removing them one by one, but they still have the control of the money printing machine. Now that is, you know, long research has led me to the conclusion that when the United States decided in the early 1970s to go off the gold standard and go to the petrodollar, that it was Henry Kissinger who came up with this system and who has the code for creating dollars. I've heard that Henry Kissinger was given a little honeymoon or whatever with the election of Trump, and that also ends on May 1st. So we've got to find this man. We've got to get those codes for producing dollars. And this is, again, I think, where this election of the Knights of Malta and the Pope are involved, because these people were at the top of the system. That's what forensic research has taught me. It's a sort of a global Roman Empire that controlled the production of dollars and euros and yen. And these are the people fighting to cling to power in France and you know, blackmailing Trump into becoming their puppet. And you know, these are the people we need to deal with. And we know who they are. People like the Agnelli brothers and the people in Malta and all these guys. And we need to get to them and say, come on, you guys, it's time to fix the planet. You know, wake up, face reality. Let's just be sane here now. Get away from, and a lot of it is at the very top, it's religious fanaticism visions of the apocalypse and you know, stuff that this is not healthy. It's not, you know, one thing that Asians always say about Westerners is, why do Westerners keep thinking the world's going to end, you know? What sort of thinking is that? The world is going to go on forever and we're going to make it better and better. That's the sort of thinking you need. gotta switch this idea that there's going to be an apocalypse out of these people's minds and start a new age instead. What sort of future do we want to build? What sort of world do we want to live in? How can we get there? These are the questions that your society, the Western society, has not been asking itself. Instead, they've been going along according to ancient religious beliefs. You know, and it's just not rational.
It isn't. I agree. And we all come, it comes back to the same thing about we have these psychopath Satanists who are running the world, and we need to lock them up and you know, put them in a place where they can't hurt themselves or anyone else.
And a lot of them are being locked up. You know, they've been disappearing one by one, and we're going to continue doing that until it's finally over. You know, I think now we've got to go to Switzerland and Italy to get some of the top people there. But the visible structures are the things that we need to concentrate on. That's the IMF, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve Board, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, the BIS, the Rothschild Family Complex in Zug, Switzerland, the things that you can see. And then the other thing we need to go into are these foundations. That own all the corporations and the families that own the foundations. This is, you know, you got to follow the forensic trail and flush these people out, which is what we've been doing. That's why David Rockefeller was out there, you know. And we need to keep doing that. And the other thing is that we need to separate among the ultra-rich, people who got rich by making things that...
Versus people who do the financial manipulations. Hey, Ben, we need to take a break right now because we've got to reboot our recording device here. Let's go ahead and wind this up now. We'll be right back in a couple minutes. We'll call you back presently, okay?
Okay. I think we need to talk more about nitty gritty now, who the players are in this part of the world. What's happened here, okay, is there's a lot of things going on. I've been in touch quite frequently with Japanese military intelligence, CIA in Asia, and other types. You know, you had recently had Rex Tillerson come here. You had Vice President Michael Pence come here. And they've been trying to get money to keep the U.S. corporation going on. When Tillerson showed up, they're trying to push for this politician called Ichiro Ozawa, who used to work for the Rockefellers, had a fallout with them, and now they're sort of trying to bring him back into their fold. And they tried to get the emperor to put his official government, Japanese government seal on ¥4 quadrillion bond issued by the World Bank. This is, I think it was like $40,000 trillion, some outrageous sum. And the Japanese refused to put their chop on it. Now, the situation is this, is that the emperor, the Showa emperor, Emperor Hirohito, was genuine emperor. But when the American forces landed in Japan, before they did, he presented an actor as his son because he didn't want his real son to be brainwashed and indoctrinated by the Americans. And this is the emperor we have now. However, he is saying that, you know, despite that, he wants to do the right thing. While David Rockefeller was alive, he kind of did whatever Rockefeller told him to. But now that David Rockefeller is not here, he wants to do the right thing and not, you know, keep this horrific military-industrial machine financed. And Japan is really important for the U.S. because... there's this thing called Zaito. It's an unofficial budget. It's things like taxes on oil, on gasoline, and liquor and tobacco, and things that. Anyway, it provides you with about $2 trillion a year, and I've said don't don't keep paying these people at $2 trillion a year until we get the reforms we wanted. And the other thing is that they're not signing, they're not putting their chop on any more attempts to create money. Apparently in the old system, you know, the creation of money was sort of decided by people like Kissinger and Rockefeller, but as a formality, the Japanese emperor was supposed to, you know, put his chop on it, and that's been stopped. So there's this kind of blank here. There's a kind of, everything's on, in on hold until we can figure out what to do next. And when Michael Pence here came, he was frustrated they couldn't get money, so he sort of told the Prime Minister Abe, either you do that or we're going to have you arrested, and then told him he had to quit by June. And they're still trying to get their man Ozawa in as the new head of the system. And they're promising that they'll, you know, release unlimited funds once Ozawa is put in. But Ozawa's mother is North Korean, and he's not very well liked in the Japanese political world. And he's definitely not the man for the job. So they don't want him here. They don't want him in charge, okay? So that's not going to happen. Again, I'll admit, I put my name forward temporarily. Like in The Lord of the Rings, the guy who, Frodo, whatever, takes the ring and melts it in Mount Doom. That's what I want to do. Give me the ring and I'll throw it into Mount Doom and melt it. And we'll get rid of the system and replace it with something that's more open, transparent, and reflects the will of the people as well as the will of the smartest people. That's what we're trying to come to. But that's sort of underneath the surface, that's what's going on. Now, there's also some nasty stuff going on in Indonesia, where Mike Pence went there and met with some...
Yes, there is. There is. They're trying to format Islamic extremism in Indonesia as well. People don't realize it's a Muslim country of 200 million people, and that's a powerful force in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and they're trying to foment radicalism and hatred there to keep, you know, so that they can put their people in power again. And but the current president, Jokowi, is very popular, and the Indonesians don't want these people to mess with them. There's just a few billionaires connected to the old regime who are trying to do this, and we know who they are, and they're going to be taken out if they're going to keep trying to do this. And I put their names out in my weekly report, I believe. At least the key guy, but it ain't gonna happen, okay? The nobody wants them to go and do their whole IS thing in Indonesia. Not welcome, okay? Indonesia is moderate Sufi Islam. It's not radical Wahhab Islam. Perfectly, you don't feel alienated going to Muslim countries like Malaysia or Indonesia, like you do if you go to Saudi Arabia.
No. I ran a business out of Singapore. I had offices. I had two offices in Malaysia. I had one in Indonesia, and spent a lot of time there, you know, for about a 15-16 year period. And no, you're very welcome. It's a very conservative culture, but it's a welcoming culture at the same time.
Yeah. Whereas if you've been, I've been to Saudi Arabia, and boy, you know, they have these religious police with red-dyed beards and big sticks that just go around and beat people on the spot, and they have public beheadings and beheadings, and there's no rule of law. It's all like a family arbitrarily, you know, considers the people their property and slaves. It's a horrific place. And, you know, my father was a Canadian ambassador there for 20 years. I met one of these princes when I was there. I was just a university student at the time, but boy, that was the most alienating place I've ever been to on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you definitely want to go into Saudi Arabia and clean up that whole Wahhab mess once and for all, you know, and that's got to be done. You know, Islam is fine, but Wahhab is not Islam.
No, I had a meeting with the Grand Mufti of Syria about this topic, and the label that he gives it, he calls it the Wahhabi blasphemy. Yeah. That's really, I think, a very accurate name for it. And you have to look at how the U.S. has played into this, because you look at what Hollywood produces. I mean, you can go back 20 years. Look at that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis called True Lies. And they're portraying the terrorists in there as being Iranians, but they're Wahhabist. And nothing could be further from the truth. And so they've been spreading this lie that all Islam is Wahhabi Islam, whereas true Islam is nothing even closely resembling that.
You have to go back to Hollywood, the 1950s. You know, we have Sinbad the Sailor and that kind of stuff. You know, to get a more accurate view.
Yes, exactly, exactly. You know, very very well spoken. And I love those Sinbad movies. I watched those as a kid. They were great.
Right. I mean, so the point is that this whole demonization thing is run by the T2 Freemasons and by the Satanists, because there's two different agendas. One group, the P2, they're trying to force Christianity and Islam to fight each other until they become a single world monotheistic religion controlled by them. But another group within them is just, you know, wanted to do this Gog Magog scenario and start World War III and kill 90% of humanity so they can enslave the rest. And that's, I think, the Saudi royals and Netanyahu, those people are all part of the same group, you know. And they're the ones who are the worst problem. You know? And, you know, the Saudis are now pretty desperate, and they know that there's a blanket above them, I think they're ready to surrender, and they're trying to negotiate it, and I think it gets accommodated. A lot of the princes are Western educated, Westernized, and they don't like Wahhab. I know that from when I was there. So we start getting rid of a few more Rothschild fanatics, people like Netanyahu. I have this person called Amin, who's been calling me, who's one of these people they've been trying to train as a radical Muslim. He told me that Netanyahu was actually an Arab, not a Jew.
Why does Netanyahu look like he would fit into a Nazi SS uniform and look natural in it? Yeah. No, I don't buy that he's there.
The name he gave me was Shaul. Okay, it was the real name of the Netanyahu. But anyway. I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly the man's behavior makes it clear he's a war criminal. I'm surprised he's still at large. I'm surprised he hasn't been arrested. But he's not going to be around that much longer. He's an evil man, and he's going to go. He was the one who called up Prime Minister Khan Naoto Khan, the day after the Fukushima attack, and threatened to blow up Mount Fuji if Japan didn't hand over all its foreign exchange holdings. So the man is involved in genocide and mass murder. By the way, I think, they know that if Tokyo's hit, then Jerusalem goes, and also if necessary, we can blow La Palma and create a 100-meter tsunami on the U.S. East Coast. So, you know, don't try to solve this by nuking Tokyo or doing something crazy like that. It's not going to work, okay? It's a Mexican standoff. So this is not going to be solved through violence. Get that through your heads, please.
Well, I think that message needs to be repeated a lot, that none of this is going to be solved by violence. It's time to get these people out of the way and to let cooler heads prevail. And let's come to some sensible solutions that actually benefit mankind, instead of just this 0.1% out there that controls 90% of the global wealth.
Yeah, here in Japan, we sort of forensically traced it. They have this thing called the Japan Foundation, and above them is the CSIS, Center for Strategic International Studies, which is run by the Vatican and T2, and it's also run out of the Freemason headquarters next to Tokyo Tower. Then we follow up the food chain, and we get these Knights of Malta and that sort of people, and that's where we need to come up with a solution. I've explained to the North Koreans, everybody else, that if there's some sarin gas attack in Tokyo, I've told the Japanese, it's not going to be the North Koreans. It's going to be the people at the CIS who did it. So if you want to retaliate, hit the synagogue in Tokyo and hit the CSIS, you know, go for the source of the problem. Don't let these people manipulate you into fighting each other anymore, you know? Hello?
No, I agree. I had to mute my microphone. I had a noise in the background that was distracting, so.
A dog, I heard.
Yeah, a dog. So I had to mute it because he doesn't shut up sometimes.
Okay.
Oh, well.
Anyway, and in the U.S., I think, didn't they find that they did a radiological survey of New York and they found a huge spike in the Israeli consulate. I guess they've got a nuke there, you know?
Yeah, that's been happening for a long time, that the Israelis have had nukes in their basements of consulates and embassies virtually in all the major countries of the world here. So it's all part of their Samson option. So
but the technology now exists. These nukes are being neutralized, can be neutralized. They are neutralized. They can't take the bomb off anymore. That's the fact. They've been trying to set off nukes in the Middle East, and something's been stopping them. Also, just as an aside, I had a friend who's going to be traveling all around Fukushima prefecture, you know, and so I gave her a Geiger counter, and she went around, and nowhere could she find anything but normal background radiation. So something cleaned it all up. So please, don't let them spread any more Fukushima fear porn. It's just not true.
Well, that is good to hear. That's the best news I've had today. And if we can get that same radiation cleaning technology and get that through the Pacific Ocean, that would be a very good thing, because I understand the Pacific is under some great stress right now ecologically from that event.
Well, no, it's from overfishing, okay? That's not...
There's a number of causes. The overfishing, we've got the Pacific garbage patch, which is growing daily, and it's now you've got micro-sized plastic particulates everywhere throughout the ocean. Yeah. All of this stuff needs to be addressed and remediated.
Exactly. That's why we need to turn around the whole system so that we devote ourselves to cleaning up the planet, not to, you know, destroying it. And that's just where we need this fundamental change at the top so that we can go out there and start scooping up all the plastic in the Pacific and stopping the overfishing and cleaning up all the mess we've made, you know, and realize that this is the only planet we have and we have to take care of it. And we also have to start getting ready to find homes and other planets so that we're not forever, you know, condemned to a single planet. We need to go to the universe. And I think that's another thing that will be possible once we've finished removing the final Satanists from the top of the power structure. I think they will end the quarantine on the planet Earth. I'm sure of it, in fact.
Well, Ben, that really is the best survival strategy that humanity can take, and that is to spread out and populate other planets.
Yeah, and then I think that they've been stopping us because we've had some very, very dangerous entities who took control of the top of the power structure there. I think a lot of those people at the very top are humans who've been taken over by entities. Sort of like the Day of the Triffids type thing, where they're not...
Yes.
It's a human body, but the control center is not human. I know that. I personally met some of these people, and they weren't human. They were human bodies occupied by satanic entities. And it's a weird stuff, but I wouldn't believe if I hadn't seen it, but I've seen it.
Well, that is a theory that I've heard from a number of people over the years, and you know, you hear the same story enough times, you begin to give it a little bit of credibility here. And
let's just go back and be scientific and rational and say, all right, it's not satanic entities. What it is it's a cultural thought form that's existed for thousands of years. It's a mindset wherein people are brought up in that system, are indoctrinated to believe that other human beings are their cattle and that they can herd them or kill them or do whatever they want because they are superior and that they're destined to rule the rest of the humans as slaves. So you don't even have to invoke, anything otherworldly to explain this. You can just think of it as cultural evolution if you prefer to think that way. But these people have been brought up in a mindset that's very alien to what most of us have.
Well, it is. It's very strange, actually, and it's one of the few things that is truly, it's anti-human. It's what they do. It's anti-human. I don't understand it at all. I mean, I've never wanted to hurt anybody for any reason, but these people seem to thrive off of it, and I don't know what's feeding this for them.
Well, here's what the lower level people I met. What they're saying is that the planet is full of useless eaters who are destroying the environment, and they're not producing anything, they're not creating anything, they're just destroying nature. And so we get rid of them in order to protect nature, and at the same time we get rid of the dumb and inferior people to improve the human gene stock and make the planet better and have a sort of a more balanced with the ecology run by intelligent people. This is a sort of rationalization they use. But, what I told them is, no, these people are like seeds waiting to become a jungle. They're like empty laptops waiting to be filled with software. There are incredible potential for a new Cambrian explosion of evolution, and they need to be developed to their fullest, not killed. And that you can increase population even if you increase the amount of nature and virgin nature on this planet. It's completely possible if you have the right systems in place. You don't have to kill people in order to save the environment. You can increase the population and increase nature at the same time. And that's what I'm trying to get going once we, bankrupt these people.
Well, that's a great goal. I support it 100%.
Okay, look, I'm hoping that there will be a lot of discussions in the coming week as this deadline looms, and that the good guys will prevail, and that all these warmongers will be removed one by one, and that the U.S. military and the other people who have guns are reassured that they're not going to be suddenly cut off without pay and left, like what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed and generals became taxi drivers. Nothing like that's going to be allowed to happen. Everybody's going to be okay, so don't let them fool you into starting World War III.
Okay. Well, I agree. I don't want to see the kind of economic upheaval. But what we've got in the USA right now is we've got very capable, very talented people who are highly educated, technology people, whether it's IT or semiconductors or, engineering of 15 different stripes, people who want to work, and there's no work for them.
Yeah.
And so that's the problem. And as you stated earlier, these oligarchs have eliminated all the competition. They've offshored all the jobs that, that used to support manufacturing. And how do we get that back? And I think we have an excellent opportunity here by releasing these patents that have been sequestered for national security reasons, and using those patents to retool America and retool the world along these new technologies that will be very, very productive. There is a blessing in there, and let me give an example, and that is one of the reasons that the USA lags in technology as far as telecom goes is because AT&T clung to their copper wire technology because it was a cash cow. Whereas if you go to Korea, for instance, they have the most advanced telecom system in the world because they didn't have the legacy cash cow technology that was there getting in their way. Nobody wants to kill a cash cow. Yeah. And so since the U.S. has been deindustrialized, we're prime to retool with the most cutting edge technologies there are without having to kill a cash cow. And that gives us an extreme advantage and something that would allow for, very spectacular growth over a very, very short period of time, which would reindustrialize the U.S. and make this country a wealth producing nation again.
Yeah. I mean, just one example, I think everybody could have a flying car like the Jetsons, and that alone would allow people to, everybody to live in a nice large house with a big garden and still, you know, enjoy the benefits of city life. There's so many things. I mean, as you know, the American Academy of Sciences says that at least 6,000 patents have been suppressed for so-called national security reasons. A lot of these can be released, and then that would start a new U.S. renaissance. And the copper wire equivalent in your system now is this people who are addicted to the fiat printing press and don't want to get their hands off it. But that is what's really killing the world economy, is this whole financial system that's been based on debt and creation of money out of nothing and controlled by criminals. That's the problem. So I think we have an opportunity between now and May 1st. Let's do it. Let's get over the storm the Bastille. Let's just get it done, you know?
What actions, what direct or indirect actions would you recommend for the listeners, the American people, or the people of the world to be taking to support this effort?
For most people, they should be demanding their congressmen or their local politicians to nationalize the Federal Reserve Board and restore the right to create money to the people and take it out of the hands of these private bankers. For the people in the military, they need to go up the chain of command and demand something similar, you know. And then, you know, from the bottom up, we can put pressure to flush out the final crap at the top and you know, start anew. And the other thing, of course, is that people, if anything that, you know, whatever's closest to you is most important. So if there's anything in your immediate life that you can do to make things better, do it. If we all do that, the world will be better in no time at all.
Okay. Well, very good. That's what the people need to know. They need to know how they can help, because everybody who listens really wants to take an active role. People want to help. People want this thing to succeed.
Yes. So what I'm doing here is personally, as a journalist with a long career here, I'm talking to politicians, to Japanese military intelligence, to people involved directly. I'm meeting them. I'm giving them letters. I'm explaining them how to do action plans. I'm not just, you know, talking on radio shows. I'm going out there. I'm meeting people. I'll be, you know, I'm meeting gangsters and military types and politicians and industrialists, trying to get them all to understand that this is a good thing. It's not a rat. It's not a some sort of communist revolution type thing. It's going to be a meritocracy and a rational and democratic and much healthier. It's fixing a corrupt system. It's not about, you know, getting the bad guys. It's about creating a new age. And I'm so everybody can do the same. Talk to the people you know. Get things happening where you can make a difference. Let's make this happen, okay?
Very good, sir.
All right. Well, thanks for calling me, and let's talk again.
Well, Ben, thank you for being on. It's always great to have you as a guest, and you're welcome any and every time. So the phone works both ways. Don't forget that.
Yeah, so when I think there's enough new events happening in the world to merit talking about it, I don't want to sound like a broken record and repeat the same thing time after time. But next time there's more happening, I'll definitely get in touch. So thanks for having me on.
All right, Ben, thank you so much. Have a great day over there, okay?
Sure, have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.